Episode 138 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world manage risk and seize opportunities. Learn more at futuresfundamentals.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hello, everyone. Before we get started today, I want to thank our sponsors, CME Group, Trading Technologies, and Top Step Trader. Now, today I spoke with a man that regularly gives his insight on CNBC about financial markets. He has been an analyst and a portfolio manager, and he's currently the president and chief investment officer of Avianz Capital Management. His name is Chris Bertelsen. Now, Chris doesn't focus on futures. But as a longtime futures trader, I always love to hear what other market participants think about the current theme of the market. This provides me with a perspective of what large portfolio managers are thinking. Now, today I asked Chris where he thinks we are in this equity bull market, and you may be surprised where Chris thinks we are. We then talked about the growth in the U.S. and how the bond market is calling the Fed's bluff. We spoke about the FANG stocks and their impact on the S&P. He gives us a foolproof plan for the government to create stimulus. And finally, we discuss the flows between sectors, and he explains what we should be watching. Chris is a really smart guy who I really enjoyed speaking with, and I know you'll enjoy hearing his insight on the markets. As usual, thank you all for listening, and please enjoy this episode. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anthony.
Great to speak with you today, Chris. I've heard about you and your company, and I was very interested in speaking with you. But before we begin talking markets today, I was wondering if you could please tell me your backstory. Tell us how you got your start in the industry, and take us down memory lane a bit to eventually becoming the CIO at Avianz Capital Management.
Sure. I think that the history goes back in time. I started as an analyst at State Street Bank in Boston, really concentrating on the energy business, and I didn't really start to run money until 1972, and that was a great year. And then afterwards, boy, did I get my head handed to me, and I got a healthy dose of humility, so that was certainly an eye-opener. I think the real introduction to me to the investment business was with a firm called Battery March, which was certainly one of the early firms as far as contrarian and really an attitude of what I would consider to be going away from the crowd. I was a portfolio manager there and contributed on the strategy side. Eventually, I migrated and became chief investment officer at Colonial, which was a mutual fund company, and then on to working for David Dreeman at Dreeman Value Advisors, and from there, working at Phoenix here in Sarasota, and then eventually to Avianz, which is now my company.
Now, talk to me about your reasoning to get into financial markets, because I always wondered, like, what was your drive behind saying, hey, this is what I want to do for a career? Because I know that in my experience, you really have to passion this business. And the people that I have met and spoken with on the show, it's like something triggered them to get involved with this business. And then all of a sudden they just fell in love with it. And then that's it. And then they're fully committed. So I'm wondering, what was that moment where you were like, this is really what I want to do?
Well, you know, Anthony, I can't really point to an aha moment, but I think you actually described the sequence perfectly. For me, it was when I was in college and I looked and saw how fabulous amounts of capital was going to be allocated towards various companies. And I watched the whole scene as far as interest rates are concerned and everything, and started to get an interest in it. And that was really it was sort of a slow gestation. But then once I got out of college and business school, I said, boy, I want to be in the money management business.
Once it gets its hooks in you, that's it. I mean, there's no, unless I'm a professional athlete, this is pretty much all I'd like to be doing, because the action is every day is something new, right, Chris? I mean, just like every day.
you never stop learning, and that's exactly what I like about it. It's always a new challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's begin today and let's talk about what I think is one of the biggest debates on TV, in the locker room, on Twitter, you name it, where people are invested in the market. Everyone wants to know, where are we in this bull market? And I'm not someone who trades long term. People are always asking me, Anthony, you know, what do you think about the market? And I'm like, hey, man, look, I trade level to level. I'm a futures trader. I really have no opinion on what the big picture of the market is. But I always want to know, and I know a lot of my futures trader friends as well, what is the general theme of the market? You know, so we like to know where we think the market is potentially headed so we can trade more aggressively or less aggressively, you know, our intraday stuff. And I've had a lot of bears on this show this year, a few bulls, but you're someone who believes that right now we're in the fourth or even fifth year of a secular bull market. So let's start off today by you talking to us about why you believe that and what you see happening over the course of the rest of this year.
Sure. Let me give you real quickly the longer term. The reason I say we're in the fourth or fifth year, or, you know, I'd say fourth inning if you want to use the sports analogy, is because I think the period of time between March of 2009 and, say, late 2012 or early 2013 was sort of a recovery to what I feel, in a way, was an overreaction in the market, not to the credit crunch, but to the market. So I think that we're really in the I'd say sort of some of the middle stages of a secular bull market. Bull markets last 12 to 16 years or so, and I think we're in that process. However, there's going to be a lot of opportunity to the dark side. And the only thing I would say, anybody who tries to short a dull market, shorting dullness just doesn't seem to work for me. I think you need to short volatility. We haven't seen much of it. I'm expecting at some point here we're going to get a drawdown this year. I think we've seen probably the best part of the returns for this year, but there should be another 2 or 3% of left. I mean, if there's some global political event that's shocking, of course, we'll get a downdraft. And I think that if, you know, all the measures fail, health care, and they make no progress on taxes, and it continues to be a mess, eventually people are going to get disgusted. But granted, it's earnings that really makes the market, and what I've seen from earnings so far look pretty darn good.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting right now because I feel, and I've had this conversation with a lot of people, the passive investor. I mean, right now, pretty much traveling not only the country, but, you know, a lot of Europe and part of the world. And it just seems as though right now, a very common theme is short the VIX. Not only are they, you know, long the market, but they're like getting a little bit greedy up here on the top. And they're looking for basically trading leverage on top of leverage, believing because it's been working. And that, to me, has always been something that has been like, you know, that's a trigger to where it's like, yeah, maybe this is getting a little bit a little bit frothy here. I mean, what do you hear in between your friends and other people in the industry about the state of the market right now?
Yeah, you're right. I think that I ask who's more nervous, the bulls or the bears, and I think the bulls are getting pretty nervous. However, you know, I continue to see underperformance from hedge funds and other areas where I think that there's always fuel for to keep this fire burning. What the catalyst is that finally cuts it down and we get a decent drawdown, we won't know that until we look in the rearview mirror and see it, but I think it's coming.
Yeah, no, you made a good point that because a lot of underperformance out there of that you have a lot of money that continues to buy the dips. I had one person come on the show and said maybe we're getting ready for a melt up, and you know, there's right now I feel like there's everybody's almost looking for two extremes. I don't know that everybody feels like, hey, maybe we just do nothing for the rest of this year. Maybe that's just what it is, because I think that people are looking for either that big move lower or people are looking for that big move higher. And ultimately, that's keeping us kind of right here.
That's a great point. I would say that certainly from my point of view, and obviously we're stock managers, I think it's a stock picker's market for sure. And I appreciate passive investing, but I tend to feel that it's producing some real opportunities for companies like mine.
Yeah. Now, you believe that the biggest issue facing the stock market is a world where growth has slowed dramatically. Now, I use GDP data to determine growth. I'm maybe assuming you use the same as well. We'll get into that in a moment here. But this year, we had the lowest GDP for the first quarter since 2014. It's just not trending higher like a lot of people expected. And then recently, you also had San Francisco Fed Williams say that the gradual raising of interest rates to bring monetary policy back to normal helps the economy grow at a rate that can be sustained for a longer period of time. I mean, and it's like, well, hey, we started to raise rates in December and the 10-year yield is lower than before we started. And we've had, you know, a few rate hikes. And you just look at this and go, what's going on here? I mean, what is going to happen? I mean, I think the Treasury market's calling the Fed's bluff, number one. I mean, obviously, I always believe the market over everything else that's happening. The reaction tells us a lot more. I mean, 10-year yields, 30-year yields are continuing to go lower. We have flattening of the curves. And, you know, to me, that is not necessarily an environment where you would see, you know, rate hikes. Also, the dollar's been getting a little bit weaker as well as of late. So what do you think about the U.S. Getting growth if we don't get more interest rate hikes? And what measure are you looking at to determine growth?
Well, I think that first is I think the Fed has been behind the curve. Why do we have panic level interest rates, in other words, low panic level rates, when supposedly we have the lowest unemployment we've like almost ever had? And there's so many incongruities. I don't buy for a second that the inflation is at the Fed targets rate. I think it's a heck of a lot more than that. Other than at the gas pump, you tell me something that hasn't gone up, you know, whether it's services, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare. You know, I can go down, you know, certainly food down the list. And you would say, yeah, you're right. It's more like, you know, 3% a year than, you know, whatever they say. It's certainly a conundrum with the rates where they are. I agree. I think you hit it right on the head, and that is the bond market is calling the Fed's bluff. We'll see what they do. As I said, I think that they have perpetuated a real tough situation for seniors and savers and retirees by basically keeping rates exorbitantly low, in my view, and therefore, you know, draining the savings from Americans that are, you know, 55 to 95.
Yeah, so you said, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd also say that you make a good point as far as GNP growth is concerned. I'm not saying that there isn't going to be spurts of growth in various countries at, you know, certain times, whether it's stimulus or something that makes it go. What I'm saying is that if we looked across the world, we're seeing an environment where the growth is coming down, down, down. Now, look, is Asia still growing? Sure. But you look at population growth around the world. I mean, look at China, you know, one-child policies. You look even the U.S., which was above 2 and now it's finally fallen below, and a lot of that is from immigration. You're going to see a situation where there just isn't that many units available to buy more Coca-Cola or cereals or whatever the case might be. So I think that's going to be a huge issue for companies that don't have disruptive technologies or aren't transformational companies. And so I think that's a big issue looking down the line. And I know as a futures trader, it's, you know, a lot more shorter focus, but you tell me how much has IBM grown over the last 10 years? How much has Coke grown over the last, I don't know, 20 years? And the answer is zero or shrinking.
Well, that brings me to my next point. I want to talk about the FANG stocks. I mean, this is something that I really don't like. I mean, the FANG stocks, for those of you that know, it's Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. And the reason why I don't like this is because I lived through the late 90s. This is when I started to trade, and tech-led rallies to me were how I learned how to trade the markets. But I also have learned that when you have tech-led rallies, the S&P tends to just go up as long as they're going up and they're stable. And you see a lot of rotation in sectors right now, but yet the general market doesn't rotate. And as a trader, it's always very challenging because when you see other parts of the market going down, like look at what energy is doing this year, but yet S&P, energy is a big part of the S&P, but energy, when it goes down, S&P barely dips. Everything stays high because of these FANG stocks. And for futures traders, it's one of those things where it's like, because I lived it in the past, I understand it, but it is a very hard, frustrating thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, if I go back to my, you know, initial experience in the trading world, then when those stocks start to go down, then everything just goes down really fast. And when everything is kind of rotating back up, nothing rotates up. So it's kind of like one way up and then possibly one way down. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but in my past experience, that's what I did see happen. So what are your thoughts on the FANG stocks, and will their importance continue to have a major impact on U.S. equities?
Well, I still think it'll be important for U.S. equities, but I think you and I have very little difference about our feeling on the FANG stocks. To me, the difference between when we had the late 90s tech boom and bust was that those companies had, some of them had no sales and no earnings. No, obviously the FANG stocks have terrific businesses, but Cisco had a terrific business in 99, and everybody said to me, it's going to be the first $1 trillion company, and they're going to continue to grow at 25% a year. Well, okay, and now people tell me that Amazon is the same way. You know, I've seen this movie before. From my view is that Amazon's going to be super dominant. I agree with that, but continuing to go up with the valuation that it has and people telling me that it's going to continue to grow at 25% a year, That would mean that in 10 years, it would be 25% of the U.S. economy. And that just isn't going to happen. So my view of the FANG stocks is that you have to be really careful with them. I mean, we've cut back and cut back and cut back. And I know they keep going up, but, you know, to my way of looking at it, whenever I've seen this situation, and just as you stated in the late 90s, we saw the same thing with, you know, energy stocks also in the late 70s, you know, when they go up and they go up and pretty soon, you know, the last buyer has arrived and then they have quite a pullback. And I think that, you know, maybe not right away, but in the next 18 months or so, you're going to start seeing some disappointment. I know Microsoft is included in it. I think Microsoft's a little different animal, but that's my view of the FANG stocks, which I think, very consistent with yours.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. It's a different environment now. I mean, these stocks, obviously, like you said, they have a lot more growth and earnings potential. And once again, I don't trade individual stocks, but I mean, the cream has risen to the top. I mean, these are, and then there's more than just those stocks that are doing very well this year. But like you said before, there was a lot of those stocks that were just high flyers that were just kind of, you know, just going up, and those companies really were kind of nothing companies. So it is a little bit different. For me, as a trader, what I look at it as, I look as a general sector leading the way that the S&P reacts, because that's what I mostly trade, is that it just goes one way up because it gets cling to something and it just can't rotate down. So it's like we've had all these other rotations in sectors this year, but yet the S&P has a very minimal rotation. And that's just something I keep in the back of my mind. I say, when these other stocks start to rotate, what does the S&P do? It typically will cling to them on the way down as well. So I always find that to be something just to keep, you know, in the back of my head. Now, in your emails, you mentioned to me that you wanted to talk about the most foolproof government stimulus plan. I have to admit, this is pretty interesting to me. I'm like, okay, what is this? We did not discuss it. I have no idea what you're going to say. So I basically just want to say, hey, the floor is yours. Tell me what this foolproof government stimulus plan is.
Anthony, this one is one that costs zero. The last stimulus plan that I saw was $1 trillion, and nobody can tell me where the money went. I mean, I know we've got $1 trillion more in debt. I got that all right, but the best stimulus plan is to kill regulations, and we've already seen it work. Look what's happened in the energy business. And to my way of looking at it, it's a great saver for the government because, I mean, for the American people, too. Previously, at one point, we were sending $500 billion a year for imported oil. Now we're the world swing producer, and we're starting to export the oil. And I think a big part of it is that they didn't completely kill fracking, or, you know, they didn't disallow, you know, drilling completely. And I think cessation of regulations is the way to go. We've already seen it with some of the EPA regulations. I think we may even see it when we look at the financial business. Certainly the Dodd-Frank is prime for some type of an adjustment. And that's a great stimulus, and it is foolproof in the sense that everybody hates regulations. I mean, you know, even in our company, I just can't believe the amount of time it takes us. So it's a big plus.
Yeah, I mean, and let's face it, we have a president right now, President Trump, that is really in deregulation mode. I mean, I feel like there's other things that he may or may not be able to get done, and that's for a different, you know, show. But for this show, deregulation, to me, that seems like that's something that's right on the forefront of things that he can get done.
Absolutely. And I don't care what people's political bias are. You know, we check our political opinions at the door. We want to just, you know, look at what we do as far as, you know, individual trading, futures, whatever the case might be. My way of looking at it is, you couldn't say it better, a deregulation president. And that's prime, I think, for better markets.
Yeah, no, you make a great point there. And I've heard that before, but hearing you say it again, it just reinforces, I think, what the market is seeing out of this president. And I think that the market, the tape itself continues to respond to it, is because once again, I mean, we always go back to, as traders, we just want to be on, you know, the right side of things. You know, we have our strategies. I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm a futures trader. I'm executing a strategy. I'm not overly concerned about, you know, a lot of these things that are going on. I mean, obviously I care for, you know, my own personal reasons of some of these reasons, but from a trader's perspective, I'm like, okay, what are they saying versus what are they doing and what can they get done? And to me, the market is saying to us, this can get done, I think, in some respects.
Couldn't agree with you more on that.
Yep. All right, great. Well, this was a really fun convo, and I have more questions for you, and these are called our rapid-fire segment questions. So if you're ready for those, I'm going to fire those away at you.
Let's go.
All right, everyone. Our rapid-fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Trade the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. Create your account and try it now, free at tryttnow.com. First question, how has your trading evolved over the years?
Well, I think it's basically become more selective. To me, trading is all about picking those areas where you know best. What I've done and what I've focused on is two areas. First is in the energy business, and that's one of the reasons why we own almost no energy stocks right now, and have been out of them for the last, you know, 5-6 months. And once you understand one business or two businesses, you really are able to do a better job.
Can you tell me the moment that trading just clicked for you?
It clicked in 1980. I don't think people realize, but it was a panic about energy throughout the 70s. Fortune wrote an article in 1980 saying, you know, there's a lot more oil coming on board in this world. And that's the day that I looked at it and said, it's time for me to be on the short side of oil, or in essence, to be a seller of oil. And all of the institutions were just loading up on it. They had 20% positions plus in their portfolios. It was 15% or more in the S&P. And it was basically just like you said earlier about the, you know, when we were talking about FANG stocks, I think, you know, you got to look at it and say, hey, there's a point when, you know, you want to be out of this area.
What is the number one resource you spend your time on?
The number one resource that I spend my time on is basically watching the flow from stocks and sectors to sectors. What it tells me is it's where the money is going. I think that there's always big footprints from institutions, and I love to see it when they're leaving an area, because it leads me to my favorite buying signal, which is when there's no news on stocks. Not when there's bad news, but I love it when there's no news on companies, and they make sense to me.
What's your favorite book about trading or the markets?
My favorite book is Reminiscence of a Stock Operator by Edward Lefebvre. It's basically a thinly disguised autobiography about Jesse Livermore, who traded around the turn of the century, turn of 1900s, that is, not 2000. And if you read it, you're going to be stunned, because you'll say, boy, the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's a jaw dropper, even today, on how similar things are. Nothing seems to really change.
What's your favorite movie or TV show about trading or the markets?
Well, it's Wall Street, and the reason is that Mike Douglas was a roommate of mine, and certainly I'm very partial to any of the work he's done, and I thought it was, you know, kind of an interesting show at the time.
What's the best piece of advice you've received about trading or the markets?
my advice to people is trust your instincts. If you don't feel you can do it, you're too emotional, get somebody else to do it. But once you have a feel for it, trust your instincts, because as soon as you start listening to somebody else and you get a tip, well, they might give you a tip to buy, but, you know, are they going to call you when they sell? So trust your instincts.
Now, if you can give a piece of advice to the new people interested in getting involved in trading, what would it be?
The one piece of advice is look for extremes. The hardest thing to do is to check your emotions. Just look for extremes. Look for it when you just hear all the good news in the world about it, and then you know it's time for you to step on the other side as far as that's concerned. Like in cult stocks, you know, I wouldn't do it. Buy, you know, I wouldn't keep buying them or try to short them when they're on their way up. You want to pile onto them when you start seeing volatility if you're going to the short side on them.
Now, if you weren't in the finance industry, you'd be doing what?
If I wasn't in the finance industry, I would be probably working for Ford's special vehicle operations or Mercedes operations. I would be a car guy from day one.
Interesting. Now, a couple things I want to go back to. I can't let you go without talking to me a little bit about you being a roommate with Michael Douglas, because he's one of my all-time favorite actors. Talk to me a little bit about that before I let you go.
First is really a great guy, and I don't have time to tell you one of the stories about it, but here's somebody who came from, you know, at that time, certainly some prestige and wealth and everything, but he's a person who treated everybody, I think, the same. He had humility and a great sense of humor. He was a terrific guy to be in the same room with, so I just think very high marks to him, and I've watched how he developed as an actor, and then very high marks.
Yeah, he's one of my all-time favorites. And one other thing I want to comment on before I let you go, you talked about watching the flows between sectors. What are you seeing right now in anything that you're watching?
Well, I think that, you know, the short-term flows have been into the healthcare area, because I think everyone is thinking that they're going to be beneficiary of another round going forward. And I do kind of agree with that. But I think it's probably at this point, you know, you're a little late to the game as far as that's concerned. I think there's a setup for, you know, some other areas that you might be able to, you know, to trade in for income investors. To me, you know, the U.S. telecoms are looking really cheap in here. You know, they're unloved, unwanted, sold off. Those are the types of things that I look for as far as the current flows. But what I'm seeing for flows is telling me, you know, on a daily basis on, you know, what areas are receiving the most attention from institutions. And by the same token, I keep looking for it when, you know, the flows finally are gone out of an area and it's really cheap and available for me to buy.
Now, I know you're an old school guy. You've been in the business for a long time. Is there anywhere people could follow more about you, whether it's a website? I don't know if you're on Twitter, maybe.
Thank you for asking. It's AviancesCapital.com. Just check our website. You'll see a lot of videos. I've been on, you know, CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Business, and you'll see some of my thoughts about the markets and also about individual sectors and stocks.
Well, this was great. I had a lot of fun speaking with you. I really enjoy your perspective on these great topics that we discussed today. Is there anything that we missed that maybe you'd like to add to today's show?
Anthony, I really can't think of anything right now. I would tell you that, you know, a couple of advices to traders, and I would say your discipline trumps your conviction all the time. And also understand that, you know, in the business of making money, bulls and bears live on, and pigs get slaughtered. If you get a trade that's going your way, like people who've owned the FANG stocks over the last 3 years, boy, take something off. Throw a maiden into the volcano, as they say.
Yeah, we always say throw one to the trading gods. Then they finally end up going for us, and then they maybe go your way a little bit more. Chris, you're the best. Thank you for so much for coming on Futures Radio Show today, and I look forward to having more conversations with you in the future.
Thank you, Anthony, for having me on.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.